Hi, I'm Jeff Walters, and welcome to The Minutes. And thanks for listening today. It's great to have you along on The Minutes for the week of February the 24th, 2025. This is a City of Thunder Bay podcast. The Minutes takes a look at what happened at Thunder Bay City Council this past week. You can find The Minutes wherever you get your podcasts, including our YouTube channel and our website, thunderbay.ca/theminutes. If you want to keep your finger on the pulse of what's happening at City Hall, just hit that subscribe button. On this episode, we'll have a rundown of what happened at Thunder Bay City Council this week in an interview with Joel DePuter, the Director of Development Services. Council got an update on the creation of a one-stop development shop on Monday night, and we'll get filled in. But first, though, a planning application topped the agenda for council on Monday night. A property owner wanted to sever a piece of land on Oliver Road to create two additional lots from one property on Oliver Road. The applicant spoke for the reasons for the additional lots, and there were two other people who spoke at the meeting. One was in favor, and one was in objection to the amendment. City administration was not in support of the official plan amendment that was needed to create the new lots. The original parcel of land has been severed six times since 1978, which exceeds the two-lot maximum that is permitted by the 2019 official plan. Amendments to the official plan in 1980 and also in 2022 created the four lots. The creation of more lots are inconsistent with the provincial policy and does not mesh with the general intent of the zoning bylaw and official plan, according to administration. The proposed lot would be consistent with urban sprawl and inefficient land use, and planning staff wrote that in a report. Now, all of the proposed lots would have minimum frontage requirements, but the retained or the original lot would not meet those requirements. Council sent the resolution back to administration, noting that it did want the lots to be created. Now, since council is going against the professional planning recommendation and they want an alternate resolution, council must provide reasons as to what it wants included in the recommendation for the official plan amendment. Council wants to create the lots while maintaining the existing rural character of the area, while representing infill of an existing area that doesn't need additional services, that the severance of the lots will maintain adequate water quality and quantity as the area is serviced by wells, and that the creation of the lots will have a limited impact on agricultural potential in the area. Administration will now work on crafting a new recommendation. There's no return date to council for this matter. There were some announcements at council on Monday night. Councillor Greg Johnson will host a Nebing Ward meeting on March the 11th. It starts at 7 p.m. The meeting will take place at City Hall, although the meeting will also have a virtual component, so you can watch online or through council's regular broadcast channels. City Council passed the Boulevard Garden and Maintenance Bylaw this week. The bylaw has been under development for more than a year. It will allow homeowners, property owners, and tenants to plant perennials and annuals in the boulevard. The idea is to enhance biodiversity, increase food security, and beautify underutilized spaces throughout Thunder Bay. Since the bylaw has now passed, people can legally plant items other than turf grass on their boulevard. The bylaw sets out a number of rules for gardening on the boulevard that includes setback distances for plants from trees, sidewalks, roads, and utilities, along with creating height limits for plants. After input from council and the public, boulevard gardens can include planter boxes and shrubs. Gardeners will have to fill out a declaration form on the city's website in the coming months prior to planting their garden. The city will launch an educational campaign as well this spring to inform the public about the new bylaw. City Council passed a bylaw confirming some local improvements to be done along McDonnell Street. The bylaw allows for curb and gutter work, along with a new storm sewer between Squire Street and Central Avenue. The majority of property owners along the road agreed to pay for the work, with the city picking up some of the tab. The amount a property owner has to pay for the work is based off the amount of frontage that they have along the roadway. The cost of the work is expected to be about $750,000. There were two items that came out of closed session on Monday night at council. One was the sale of land in Inova Park. That land was on Innovation Drive. The land was sold to Boreal North Holdings. The second item at closed session is a property-related matter. Council voted to proceed as directed. Council will also have a closed session meeting on March the 3rd. It starts at 4:30 in the afternoon. As well, council voted to have a non-business meeting also on March the 3rd, and that starts at 5:30 p.m. The meeting will provide an opportunity for council to receive information on a designated truck route. the public is allowed to attend the non-business meeting. The Community Economic Development Commission made a presentation to council on Monday night, highlighting its marketing efforts on what it calls a lifestyle platform. The platform is meant to highlight what Thunder Bay has to offer when it comes to lifestyle and living in the city. The idea is meant to encourage employees and employers to relocate to Thunder Bay, highlighting the quality of life available in the city. The presentation was made by the CEO of the CEDC, Jamie Taylor, along with the communications coordinator. Council got an update on the one-stop development shop on Monday night. The goal of the one-stop shop is to simplify approvals, enhance collaboration between different groups, and deliver better customer service. Another goal is to modernize how services are delivered in development services, which includes building permits and planning applications. Some of the work that needs to take place includes the creation of a single phone number, email, and service counter for all development needs, centralizing development-related services under one roof, enhancing coordination with external groups that are required for development, helping to guide large-scale developments, expanding digital tools, prioritizing in-person customer service, and looking to expedite approvals. Immediate priorities of the one-stop shop include creating a single point of access for developer needs, providing a service to give expert advice on larger projects, enhancing project coordination and problem-solving, and strengthening marketing to keep the development community informed. More updates on this project will be shared in the next quarter, and my guest on the podcast today will be Joel DePuter, who is the Director of Development Services. We'll hear from him in just a few minutes. Council approved the creation of the Asset Retirement Obligation Policy this week. An asset retirement obligation is the retirement of a capital asset after the acquisition, construction, development, and normal use of an asset. This work includes removal of asbestos, leasehold improvements, removal of underground storage tanks like fuel tanks, and closures of landfills. The city already has a policy to account for the retirement of these assets. The purpose of the new policy, though, is to make sure that accounting and reporting for all of the obligations is properly complied with. The report notes that, consistent with other municipalities, Thunder Bay's asset retirement obligations are currently underfunded. The actual needs to settle the amount will be considered as part of the annual budget process. The city's asset management plan moves ahead. Further funding considerations will be made. Council approved the creation of a Memorandum of Understanding with Confederation College this week. Councilor Mark Bentz declared a conflict on this item as he is an employee of the college. The MOU states that the city and the college will work together to identify, pursue, and collaborate on ideas that have mutual interest and to effectively use resources and talent. The broader goals of the city and college include being attractive to entrepreneurs, investors, highly skilled job seekers, students, and a diverse workforce. As well, the MOU encourages the two parties to exchange information, data, and research findings, while also sharing expertise to shape policies. The document also notes that raising the profile of the college and the city, advancing truth and reconciliation calls to action, and making the city a better place to work, live, and prosper is also part of the goals. An oversight committee will have quarterly meetings, and an annual meeting will take place that involves the mayor and city manager, along with the college president, and other officials. There will also be day-to-day communication between the college and the city. The MOU is slated to last for 3 years, with a potential to renew the agreement in the future. City Council approved registering properties which are in tax arrears for more than 2 years. The value of the taxes owing is just over $3 million. A tax arrear certificate indicates that the property will be sold if taxes, penalties, interest, and reasonable costs incurred by the city are not paid within 1 year of registration of the certificate. Once a certificate has been registered, partial payments cannot be accepted, but an approved extension agreement could be arranged with the property owner or interested party prior to the expiry of the one-year period. There are 307 properties on the list for 2023, with $3 million owing. That represents about 1.2% of the overall tax levy. Historically, the vast majority of properties that are registered have their taxes paid before going to a tax sale, and generally less than 20 properties have an extension agreement, so the taxes get paid. Usually less than a handful of properties are sold as part of a tax sale, and less than a handful are not successfully sold at a tax sale. Of the properties being registered, 285 are residential, 22 are not. As well, on Monday night, council wrote off some uncollectible accounts. The total amounts owing include about $14,000 of general accounts, $221 of municipal childcare accounts, and just over $200,000 of property taxes. For the general accounts, the city has tried to collect the amounts owing through a collection agency. In a report to council, administration says using small claims court or any legal processes will exceed the value of what is owed. This includes membership fees to the Canada Games complex, impound fees, rental fees, and payroll overpayments. For the property tax account, the city attempted to sell the land in a tax sale, however it was not sold, and the city chose not to vest the property, as it has a high environmental risk and has a high cost to remediate the property. By writing off the outstanding taxes, the city can now recover about $26,000 in tax that was submitted to the local school boards. Council voted to go ahead with a single-source contract for IT security services from a company called eSentire Incorporated. The $756,000 contract is for part of the city's multi-layered cybersecurity, which protects the city's information and information technology assets. The contract is for 3 years, and there's option to renew for years 4 and 5. A report from administration says it is more cost-efficient to single-source the contract, but the reasons are contained in a report that was delivered in closed session. And finally, Council approved a resolution from the Intergovernmental Affairs Committee this week regarding potential tariffs on Canadian goods that are implemented by the United States. The resolution says the city supports the work of the federal and provincial governments when it comes to eliminate the threat of tariffs and trade wars with the United States. As well, the city is willing to provide any assistance requested from other levels of government. The resolution will be shared with both upper levels of government, the Northwestern Ontario Municipal Association, Association of Municipalities of Ontario, Federation of Canadian Municipalities, the CEDC, and the Chamber of Commerce. And that's a wrap as to what happened at Council this week. For more information on anything that happens at Council, please visit our website, thunderbay.ca/council. Well, it is a catchy phrase, and it's meant to make building in Thunder Bay just a little bit easier. The one-stop development shop. A focus on growth in Thunder Bay means the city wants to make it easier to build or grow, be it a home, business, or large industry. The term one-stop development shop has been thrown around a few times at media events and when talking about building in Thunder Bay, but what exactly is that one-stop shop? Joel DePuter is the city's director of development services, and he's one of the people behind the concept. He was at council Monday night giving an update on this project. Joel, thanks for coming into the Minute Studio today.
Thank you, Jeff.
Yeah, glad you could make it in today. So let's start with the obvious. What is a one-stop development shop?
Sure. So the one-stop development shop, it's much about the services that are received there and also how they are received. So currently, some of the, like the development services, some of them are sprinkled throughout the city, right? So within at the development services location, you can receive planning approvals and your building permit. You can deal with real estate matters. However, would travel to another location to get your sewer and water connection and your driveway permits and somewhere else, perhaps to get a sign permit, for example. So the basic idea is to bring as many of these services as possible under one roof. If it's not possible to bring them under one roof, to streamline the service delivery so that approvals are made seamless.
I never thought there's that many things to do when you're building a home, I guess, or a new development, right? I've never done that. So you actually have to go and get that many different kind of permits.
Well, it depends on the project, but I think this is a key point here is that development isn't actually simple. I mean, a small project, if it's a deck, right, it must meet the building code. You need to make sure that their utility clearance, it needs to be, connected to the house and waterproof properly. That is a fairly small project in the scheme of things, within the scope of things that the city receives. Large projects like a new hotel development or a major industrial project, there is a considerable amount of complexity, and the city wants to make it easier for all scales of projects to navigate through the process.
Yeah, so essentially, I guess the bigger the project, also the more work it's going to be, the more groundwork it's going to be for you guys and for the developer as well.
Well, that's true.
Yeah,
and I think a key objective is to increase development capacity, right? So capacity for the developers and those that build things, and also our growth capacity for the city. So we're you know, that we're beginning to grow. We want to grow more. We want to accelerate that. There's a limited capacity in the development industry. So we want to take, like, really, yeah, maximize the amount that can be achieved.
And I think it's probably important to remind people too that, and we've talked about this a lot with like Housing Accelerator Fund and housing, is that we don't build things as the city. We don't go in and build a high rise. That's not our business.
That is true.
Yeah.
That's true. So we guide development, right, through policy and zoning bylaws. This is all the result of lots of public input and council debate. And at the end of the day, we don't facilitate the development. We apply the rules that are imposed by the province, and with the goal of making things as easy and also as safe, right, as possible.
Right. You mentioned a bunch of things that you want to kind of do with this one-stop development shop. What are kind of the priorities, I guess, right off the top?
Yeah, so there's the, in terms of the physical space, the space at development services at Front Counter will be the one-stop development shop. We're going to provide just a single point of access, one phone number, one email, so that people, often they're not sure where they need to go, and they can call that single point of contact or arrive there and receive the right service. And I know as a customer myself, it can be frustrating to be bounced around where, I think this is the area that you need to see. And it turns out that's not the case. So we really want to eliminate that completely.
Okay.
So we will be focusing on more early engagement with developers. We noticed that the pain points for developers and staff are exactly the same, right?
So
where there's, perhaps like, projects are moving ahead based on, incomplete information or perhaps poor assumptions, incorrect assumptions, and then we find ourselves in a problem well into the process. So we'd like to be engaging early, help developers see the path through the process, help them be permit ready, and then we can, we'll be able to issue those permits very quickly and have fewer difficult files.
Probably works out well that it's the pain points for both groups, right? So you can figure it out a little faster.
We have always been on the, we're all on the same team, right? And that's been made clear through consultation.
Okay. What is kind of the end goal? And I think you might have said it there, but what's the end goal of all these changes?
Mm-hmm. The end goal is to be ready for growth, to stimulate additional growth and provide excellent customer service. Also to maximize the capacity of the development sector.
So essentially helping them get things through a bit faster, I guess, to some degree.
That's right. Get the project complete faster and complete more projects. So, ideally we'd have the builders out there building things, and we can shrink that reduce the amount of effort that's required on administrative things and front-end processes. So we're happy to help.
Okay. I know that you did some engagement with the development community. This is a little while ago, as well as the public, when it came to challenges or changes that you want to see when it comes to building and development services. What were they telling you?
Mm-hmm. Developers were saying that, they need help. They can use this type of help. Development is, as I've said, is complex. It can be risky. And I think that the additional assistance that development service can provide can help reduce the costs and risk and volume. So there's been a lot of work done already. We have begun this earlier engagement. We've established a liaison service for these major, most high profile and complex projects, and have been providing staff with additional training and customer service training. And we think it's going to be a great experience for developers.
Tell me a bit more about this liaison or concierge service, I guess it's been called in the report. I read it through and I'm going, ooh, a concierge. That mm-hmm. sounds like a good time, right?
Sounds fancy. That's right. And it is. So the basic concept is that there would be a single point of contact, or I should say a main point of contact throughout the entire project. So as these projects move from, perhaps it begins with city real estate, with realty services, and then moves on to planning approvals, and then through the building permit process, into perhaps as a condominium, it moves on through legal processes for registration, that there would be a single liaison that could help move the project through the cycle. Sometimes there are complications, internal and external, involving the, it could be utility connections, for example. So we would have that single point of contact within the city that understands the entire project, where the, you know, where, and the, let's say the agency where it might be at is not understanding the full scope, and we can help advocate for the customer.
And that would be obviously just for kind of the largest projects out there. Like, we're not talking if you're building a house, that might necessarily be the case, but larger projects.
Yes, we will provide, a house is, in the scheme of things, a simpler project, typically does not go through as many levels. We're happy to provide some assistance prior to submitting a building permit, making sure the building permit package is complete, make things more streamlined in terms of the utility connections and whatnot. The liaison concierge service is reserved for those major, perhaps even transformational projects.
Okay. On a kind of an overall level, I'm not talking about the concierge service here, I'm saying in general, how many external groups, if you're building something, might you need to work with?
Well, it varies quite a bit, but I'll say common external groups might be the conservation authority. If there's a an impact on a regulated area, the external utilities, mm-hmm. telephone, gas, and electricity.
Okay. So there's a couple different groups that you have to be working with, and then you've kind of touched on this, but how will this be different than the process that we have in place right now?
So it's a enhancement of the existing service. Right now, development services staff, they're highly trained and very friendly. So, where we want to go a step further is particularly the help at the front end, right? Provide an additional range of service and limit the amount that, the frequency of a developer or project having to contact X person and go over here, right? And complete multiple applications. Further along than the concept stage, we're still within the planning stage, and consider perhaps there are application types that can be combined, so that there's so that more processes are rolled into one.
Right, and not as many forms, perhaps, maybe, or something along those lines.
That's right.
When do we expect to have this this one stop, or maybe this one call or one email, all in mm-hmm. place?
Yeah, so this will be in place for the summer, and the development services location, it will have a new face, it will be refreshed, and these services will be available, or broader range of services will be available at that location. This will, of course, be something that will be built upon over time and improved over time, as we look for additional ways to streamline approval paths and make things easier for development.
Okay, Joel, anything else you want to add before I let you go today? Okay, appreciate
it's
coming
great
in
seeing
today.
You.
Yeah, great to see you too. That is Joel DePuyter. He is the city's Director of Development Services, and he joined me today in the Minutes studio. And a big thanks for listening to the Minutes this week. Of course, if you want more information about City Council, agendas, or minutes, visit thunderbay.ca/council. If you want to listen to past episodes or maybe provide some feedback, visit thunderbay.ca/theminutes. You can also find the Minutes wherever you get your podcasts. Plus, you can find us on YouTube and on our website as well. That's thunderbay.ca/theminutes. If you want to keep your finger on the pulse of what's happening at City Hall, just hit that subscribe button. I'm Jeff Walters. Thanks for listening this week. Chat again next week. Make it a great day.